morning, Hall v. Astrid.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Paul Markham Willis, counsel for the appellant, Glenda Hall, for Tony Hall, deceased. A privilege to have the opportunity to argue before this court on behalf of our client. I'll try not to take too much time in getting straight to the heart of this appeal. Tony Hall filed an application for Social Security disability benefits on May 12, 2008. Because of Mr. Hall's death prior to the hearing on his claim, his mother, Glenda Hall, was substituted as claimant, and she's the appellant in the case before this court. Also, because of Mr. Hall's death, his claim and this appeal involve a closed period of less than 10 months of Social Security benefits. The basic issue in this case is whether Mr. Hall was disabled within the meaning of the Social Security Act and should have been granted a favorable decision awarding benefits instead of an unfavorable decision denying benefits. Before Mr. Hall died and prior to the hearing before the administrative law judge, at the behest of the Social Security Administration, he was examined by Dr. DeAndrea Perkins on September 16, 2008. Also, prior to the hearing, two non-examining physicians performed a review of records relating to Mr. Hall's treatment and gave opinions regarding Mr. Hall's limitations based on their paper review of his records, but without an opportunity to examine Mr. Hall. The administrative law judge found that Mr. Hall had seven severe impairments. Those were morbid obesity, insulin-dependent diabetes mellitus, diabetic peripheral neuropathy, history of pulmonary embolism, history of deep vein thrombosis, hypertension, and sleep apnea. Your Honors, where the appellant believes that the administrative law judge and the commissioner committed error in deciding this claim was at the point where they made a determination of Mr. Hall's residual functional capacity. That is, what physical activities, if any, Mr. Hall could perform in the workplace in spite of his seven severe impairments.
Can I ask you about that, Mr. Willis?
Yes, sir.
If I recall correctly, Mr. Hall was working up through late April of 2008, correct?
Yes.
As a over-the-road truck driver?
Yes, that was his last employment.
And he lost that job because he lost his CDL, right?
That happened along with it. In connection with being discharged by his employer, yes, he did lose his CDL because of his physical problems and impairments.
I guess I'm a little confused because
apparently
he was managing to handle the physical demands of his over-the-road truck driving up until April of 2008, right?
Correct, Your Honor, and that's why Mr. Hall's alleged onset date is...
Well, that's because of earnings, but...
Yes.
But if he was handling the physical demands of the work up through that time, is there any indication that his condition got worse after that?
Yes, there is, Your Honor. It comes from both the examining physician in this case,
well, and
it comes
she
from
compare,
his,
she couldn't compare.
Well, right? And it comes from his family. Let the testimony of lay witnesses is acknowledged under the Social Security regulations as a proper source of evidence.
Were they asked to compare his condition while he was working with his condition shortly before he passed away?
I don't know that the question was presented to them in that format, but they did provide testimony on yeah. that subject,
well, they,
Your
they,
Honor.
They, yes, talk, they talked provide, about his condition.
They provided that they did provide testimony regarding the difference when he was doing the over-the-road trucking employment as compared to when he lost that employment, because his physical impairments basically became unmanageable to him, and he was discharged from that employment basically because he could not perform it anymore. And returning to the argument, the appellant believes that the administrative law judge and commissioner made their error in only granting little weight to the opinions of the examining physician, Dr. Perkins. 20 CFR 404.1527 D1 states, generally, we give more weight to the opinion of a source who has examined you than to the opinion of a source who has not examined you.
Right.
I interpret
the ALJ said basically, look, this what Dr. Perkins had to say was awfully vague.
Yes.
Right? Would you agree with that?
I would agree that Dr. Perkins' record could be characterized as vague. At the same time, I would also say that Dr. Perkins' report and her opinions that she expresses in her report are sufficient to support a finding of limitations that, if you accept those limitations from Dr. Perkins, it leads to the result that
one could read this generously and say, yes, we think that Mr. Hall was disabled. But I think the question here is, must one read it that way? And given the vagueness, the uncertainty, the fact that he'd been working for so long.
I agree, Your Honor. I agree that if the court reads Dr. Perkins' report and concludes that it is too vague, it does not assert and identify sufficient limitations that that report could be, in that case, not considered, just as the administrative law judge, that's what the administrative law judge decided to do with it. However, the appellant believes that if Dr. Perkins' report is read carefully, while I think it could be fairly characterized as vague, it does contain enough specificity to meet the requirements of 20 CFR 404.1527D1, and because she examined him, her report, I think there must be a flaw or a lack of support for Dr. Perkins' opinions to not be given more weight than the opinions of the non-examining sources. And that does require us to take a look at Dr. Perkins' report and whether it can simply be written off as vague or whether it contains sufficiently specific limitations and opinions so that it qualifies for acceptance by the ALJ and should have been accepted. There is no, we The appellant argues there is no flaw in Dr. Perkins' report. Based upon her direct examination of Mr. Hall, her report establishes profound limitations on the part of Mr. Hall. For one, she states that Mr. Hall could barely stand up. Second, her report contains a statement, Mr. Hall could barely walk across a room. Next, she says that his exercise tolerance, or tolerance for physical activity, is less than 4 minutes, which I take to mean that Mr. Hall could not perform any type of occupation for above 4 minutes. 3 minutes and some odd seconds would be his limit.
Well, that's not really what it says. What test did she use to come up with the 4 minutes?
She did range of motion testing. As the court knows from the appellant's brief, Dr. Perkins did identify specific limitations based on her examination, and they included, one, his breathing, the fact that he ran out of breath and could not continue to carry on after an extremely short period of time. Two, distal heart sounds secondary to his body habitus.
Did she do some kind of exercise test, a treadmill or something else?
She did. She tested his gait, where in a clinical setting of her office, she had Mr. Hall walk and evaluated his gait and noticed deficits in his ability, basically once he was able to stand up and walk the very short distance. Even in that short distance, his gait was not normal. She also did perform a sensory test regarding his lower extremities and found deficits in his lower extremities to sensory perception. Next, she conducted range of motion tests and found deficits in Mr. Hall's range of motion because of his severe impairments.
Thank you.
And again, Dr.
How much do you have any other items on your list of things that she examined?
No, those were the ones that I selected from her report.
Your time has expired, so.
Yes, I have. Your Honor, do I still have? I see the red light. Does that mean that I've cost myself rebuttal with the time that I've taken?
It means you've used all your time.
Okay, thank you. I will conclude then, and I would ask that the court, in its discretion, might give me some time for rebuttal, however I understand what the red light means. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Peterson?
Good morning. May it please the Court, opposing counsel Danielle Pedersen on behalf of Michael Astrew, the Commissioner of Social Security. I would first like to cure up a misunderstanding or mistake I think that came out during opposing counsel's argument. The record is fairly clear that Mr. Hall stopped working because due to his insulin-dependent diabetes, he lost his CDL license. There's no indication in the record that he was let go, that he otherwise needed to resign because of his impairments. It was a simple matter of not having a truck license any longer. I believe that insulin-dependent diabetes may have been the factor that led to that, but he lost his CDL license because of that insulin dependence, and that is the only reason, according to the record, that he stopped working.
Insulin dependence?
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. The other thing that came up was a question as to whether or not his condition deteriorated after that. And opposing counsel did direct this Court's attention to the testimony of the lay witnesses in this case, but I would direct this Court's attention to the medical evidence in this case, which shows that during the time Mr. Hall was working, he actually had repeated episodes of deep vein thrombosis in his legs, a very serious condition, an arterial condition of the legs. However, during the period of time at issue, after he stopped working, actually, it shows that he had two different tests for deep vein thrombosis and that the medication he was taking, the Coumadin, was working and that did not recur. And he actually denied leg pain at nearly every examination during the small period of time we have at issue here, which does demonstrate that his most significantly limiting condition in terms of being a truck driver, the leg pain and the deep vein thrombosis, was something that was actually responding well to treatment and was resolving. Now, the court knows and has said numerous times that it will uphold the ALJ's decision so long as it is supported by substantial evidence, which this court has indicated, as well as every other court, means evidence sufficient that a reasonable mind could reach the conclusions that the ALJ did. I think opposing counsel has essentially already conceded that a reasonable mind, a reasonable person, could read Dr. Deandra Perkins' exam in a way that the ALJ did, which is to find that it was very vague and was not generally well supported either by the record or by her own findings. In particular, the only real opinions that Dr. Perkins gave was a general statement that, and I believe there was a typo, in fact, she said he had his ability to stand, move, lift, carry, and manipulate objects was limitations, which obviously she probably meant was limited. One of the things the ALJ noted immediately was that her exam of Mr. Hall's hands and arms was entirely unremarkable. Normal grip strength, normal ability to move his hands and manipulate objects, which made it curious that she included in her list of things that would be limited the ability to manipulate and carry objects. There's certainly no support in the record for that limitation. And the ALJ reasonably concluded that that sort of cast additional pallor over these vague opinions of Dr. Perkins. Dr. Perkins' other observations certainly were that Mr. Hall became short of breath and sweaty walking across the exam room. The ALJ in this case did limit Mr. Hall to sedentary work, which, as this court knows, is primarily seated work. Dr. Perkins noted there were no limitations in Mr. Hall's ability to remain seated. Again, Dr. Perkins' exam could be read in different ways, but most of her opinions, as they were medical opinions, were very vague. There wasn't any clear indication of how long he could stand, how long he could walk, how much he could lift. So instead, the ALJ looked to the opinions of the reviewing state agency physicians who did make those very specific findings and who did actually also specifically take into account not only all the evidence of record up to that point, but also the exam findings of Dr. Perkins herself. Those physicians agreed that Mr. Hall, based on the combination of his impairments, could perform a range of sedentary work that allowed him to lift slightly heavier weights, 10 pounds frequently and 20 pounds occasionally. And the vocational expert ultimately identified approximately 5,000 jobs that could be performed, which the ALJ found was a significant number of jobs. I think that the substantial evidence in this case, sufficient evidence to allow a reasonable mind to draw the same conclusions as the ALJ, does support the ALJ's decision in this case, and we would therefore ask the court to affirm the district court's decision.
Can I ask you one quick question, Ms. Patterson? I hadn't seen before this idea of presumptive approval. Could you explain to me where that fits in? Isn't that kind of unusual?
No, I have not seen that either, Your Honor. That was unusual to me as well. I do know that at the initial and reconsideration steps, typically a state agency reviewing physician looks at the evidence that's available at the time, and that is why we frequently have those reports in the record. I have not ever heard of a situation where somebody, you know, is found presumptively disabled. I do know that in circumstances where somebody meets or medically equals all the requirements of a listed impairment, that might be a situation where a case gets flagged for more careful screening or something along those lines. But as you can see in this case, the two physicians that reviewed the record for the agency both concurred that this individual could do a range of sedentary work. So I don't see any medical opinion that would have explained that anomaly in the record.
Did that come before or after the Dr. Perkins exam?
I don't recall the date on that form, Your Honor. I apologize. But again, those findings have to be based on a medical opinion, and in this case, the medical opinions from the reviewers are consistent and are supportive of the ALJ's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Willis, since I asked a question towards the end of your time, I'll give you 1 minute, but it is 1 minute, so you have to conclude.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. One of the points emphasized by opposing counsel was that Mr. Hall in the course of his medical treatment was identified, really I think only once, as his noncompliance contributing to his conditions. Thereafter, in his medical treatment, I think we've cited five instances where he's in seeing doctors to comply and try to make strides in his condition. And, Your Honor, only to make an analogy to Mr. Hall's conduct, I think that if a he struggled with his conditions. As an analogy, I think if a basketball team loses a game, that does not mean that it did not try in that game. And likewise, if a basketball team is trying its hardest in a game but is still struggling, sometimes that team is going to experience episodes of discouragement. I believe that explains some of the information in Mr. Hall's records.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.